Hey everybody, welcome to Get to Know Your Wedding Pro. My name is Reed with Best Made Videos. We are a wedding videography company based out of West Seattle, Washington. And I'm so excited today to be joined by Jane Lenka. She is a musician and has really set the bar for future guests in terms of providing me ample, you know, notes and materials and background. I mean that. I want to thank you so much for that and being well prepared. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do.
Hi there. I'm Jean Lenka. I'm calling you from Port Ludlow, Washington, where I've been living for about 9 months. We moved here in August, and I am a musician who has been providing music for special events and just doing general club music and summer concerts for about 10 years out of Philadelphia and that region. And so I'm starting over out here on the Olympic Peninsula. I'm already in the gigging game, doing live music at wineries and restaurants and festivals, other things like that, that are all, of course, canceled now. And I'm hoping to expand what I was doing sort of as a sideline in Philadelphia, wedding music, and pump it up for the next couple of years out here on the peninsula. I really enjoy it. It's something that I find very special working with clients one-on-one. I've done other wedding services throughout my lifetime, and this opportunity to do it as a musician has just been a blessing.
Yeah, and what a fun area of the Pacific Northwest to be living in. I mean, truly beautiful and anything kind of out there. What are your favorite parts about living out there? What do you enjoy about it?
Well, we came here to get away from the heat and the bugs and the extreme weather of Philadelphia. I grew up in Monterey for part of my life, and we always wanted to live there and, of course, can't afford it. And so we found the Pacific Northwest on one of our vacation trips and just fell in love. I love being able to drive, whether I'm going to the grocery store or the vet or wherever, I can see the mountains and the sky and the sea all in one trip. Every single day. And that is an amazing gift.
What was the biggest change coming from Philadelphia? I've very few times been out to the East Coast, but obviously a big shift? What do you miss, or what was the biggest change of that?
Other than, you know, the obvious beautiful benefits, the biggest change was probably that you do have to get in your car to go anywhere. I can't really get on my bicycle and ride into town to the farmer's market and ride back with vegetables. I can't run around the corner to a Wawa and pick up ice or milk. You kind of have to leave with intention and maximize your trip. I do love driving, though, and so I find it very peaceful, and I don't find it a hardship to have to drive anywhere. It was just a big shift in the way you have to think and plan things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And especially being out, you know, on the peninsula, everything's a little more, you know, spread out sometimes and getting everywhere.
Definitely.
But yeah, like you said, you have the, at least some good scenery to look at while you're doing it.
That's right.
So you're a musician, you have kind of a very interesting bio here. You know, you sent over some notes and everything ahead of time, you know, growing up, you know, with a family in the military and everything. How did you get involved in music, and how did, I always think it's so interesting. Everyone's story leads them, you know, down a different road where we all end up, and kind of the vendors we are now is because of, you know, what we experienced in our lives. So kind of walk me through getting to this point we're at.
Sure. As a small child, I studied classical piano. I wasn't a prodigy or anything like that. Just your average student playing Beethoven and Bach and Brahms and all that beautiful music. And I did that for about 7 years. I sang in grade school choir. And high school choir, I was always in the alto section. Altos never get any glory. We never get the lead. So we always think of ourselves as our harmony singers. And then I went off and ended up getting married a lot sooner than I thought. Raised 3 children with my husband in the military. And then we got out and moved to Pennsylvania, where we spent the last 23 years. And I have to say that it's my children who led me back to music. If you're lucky, you have children in a school district where they get to start to learn music in grade school. And mine picked up music in grade school, on into middle school. One of them screamed in a death metal jazz experimental band for a while. And it was watching them grow up that brought me back to music. And through people I met at church and through the school, you know, we sort of reached a point where our kids were growing up around us and we needed to stop hovering and find our own stuff to do. And one of the guys in my life said, well, let's just start a garage band. And we all laughed at him. And he said, no, I'm serious. He said, if sixth graders can do this, we can do this. So that's what we did. He handed me a microphone and a piece of sheet music. I think it was Carole King's It's Too Late. And he said, can you read? Let's go. And we goofed around for a while. And 12 years later, I was running three bands, summer bands, and a music circle and a women's jazz collective out of Philadelphia. And it all evolved into something I would have never, ever expected for myself in my life.
It's so interesting. And we were just talking kind of before we started recording. We just posted Ben Meadows' podcast today. He's a DJ. And it's so interesting.
That was an excellent interview.
Yes. No, and he did great. But talking about music and how it's just so important for, you know, every aspect of our lives. And especially when it comes to, you know, our wedding day, which is, you know, with your partner and you're supposed to, you know, combine your families and friends and everybody. And it's just interesting how important music, you know, throughout our lives, I guess it should be no surprise how important it is, you know, for one of the biggest days of our lives as well. Right.
That's true. It's so interesting you say that because now I think back to my own wedding and we didn't have any music. We had absolutely no music. I forgot about that. We sort of had a stop and go wedding. My husband was on deployment from one place to another and we popped into town, had a church wedding and a dining room backyard cocktail reception. And then we bailed and were off on the road to move to a new state. And we never had any music at that event. That is so strange.
That's, yeah.
And now, the way I think about music and weddings is it's such a very personal, important part of a wedding for many, many people. There are those of us who love DJs, and I love DJs. I love listening to Ben talk about his experience. And then there are others who all they really want is someone to come and sing this one special song in their ceremony. And that's their whole focus. And the rest of it, how it folds around them, doesn't matter so much as long as it's pleasant. So everybody's different. And today there are so many wonderful different options and ways you can go with live music, with DJ music, and blends of the two.
No, it's crazy. I remember we had a wedding this summer up in like Rosario Resorts, like up in, you know, the San Juan Islands, and they had the couple had a singer come out, and you know, at first you were just kind of running, getting everything, and I'm like, oh, this, you know, this guy must be someone that lives up here, you know, whatever. I mean, who would pay? Right. I'm so dumb. You know, who would pay and make this a priority? Right. And that's my own, you know, here I am expecting people. Right. But it's, you know, every day is a learning experience. And it wasn't. And this guy was, you know, a phenomenal singer and, you know, really well known and, you know, plays around and whatever. And, you know, the couple thought it was, you know, so important to them that, yeah, you know, they did pay him to come up and do, you know, cocktail hour and then sing a cover song for their first dance. And I just thought that was such a testament to how important that was to them, right? And the experience and just kind of making everything. And I thought, well, that makes perfect sense that you would have someone come up and do that because as important as flowers or napkins or video is, you know, music and really setting the tone of the day is equally as important. You know what I mean?
Right. And it can be so different for everyone. You know, it's quite possible that gentleman could have been from what is that? The Rosarius is on Orcas Island, right?
Yeah.
He could have been from Orcas Island and been a magnificent musician. And often we don't know who's in our own community. And so the easiest thing to do is go online and click and look for a band or a DJ. And one of the things that I love to do is work with the musicians that are local to the communities where the weddings are happening that I'm doing. And as a jazz musician, I have the freedom to play a little bit with who is on my team. I have core musicians that I work with on a regular basis. But if we're going down to Olympia, for instance, I might take two of my own musicians and pick up two musicians down there to fill out the team. And that makes it all different and creative and exciting.
Do you enjoy, and I think this is an obvious answer, but I guess talk about the enjoyment you get from really customizing, working with your couples, really figuring out what's going to be right, what they want, what's going to work. Talk about that kind of whole experience.
Oh, I really love it. I mean, I love that even just if I'm going to go do a winery gig. I tend to be, my musicians will tell you that I tend to be theme obsessed. You know, if it's right after New Year's, we're going to do a whole evening of music all about time. And if it's right before the Grammys or excuse me, the Academy Awards, we're going to do a whole evening of music that comes from film songs. So I love pulling together set lists that mean something, whether it's for a wedding or a church service or a special show. And I pour that into my work with couples. I have some sample music set lists up on my website. And if you look at them, you can see that there's personality in them. Some of them speak on a very personal level to the music that they grew up with. Some of them, you know, I had a couple get married in a theater and they just wanted all Broadway tunes. And so when we did the in-gathering music, we did all Broadway tunes. And it was very easy to pull together if, when you just take the time to think about it. So I do spend a lot of time asking couples, you know, not just what their two songs are for their special dances, but what are the songs, what's the music they listen to? Send me your playlist. I want to listen to your music and get an idea of what your music personality is. And then I might suggest some things back to you. And then they'll suggest more things. And together we come up with something that's the core of the music for the evening. And then I fill in around it. And that's a lot of fun.
It's so interesting to me hearing you talk about, you know, these different weddings and the theater and the Broadway tunes and thinking how much I miss just kind of with everything going on right now, just that creativity and really getting to share that experience and hear, you know, unique takes from lots of different couples and whatever they want that to be for their day. I do really miss that because it used to be, you know, every other week you're talking with someone about something cool that they're going to do. And that really is something that's been taken away from everybody right now, you know, creatives and couples planning and stuff. It's, I would love to help plan anything even remotely close to that right now, hearing about some of the fun things you're talking about.
I know. It's I feel like I'm starving creatively. I do work well with others and I don't work well by myself. I find myself in isolation, frustrated, unable to start things but not unable to finish them. I need the motivation from a group to create. And I'm not tech savvy. I'm not on Zoom. I can't play music for myself. I really depend on my musical family. I've made a commitment since I'm home. I'm trying to learn to play the guitar. So I'm learning to play the guitar and singing on the back porch with my dog. And that's my only creative outlet at this point. So I'm really hopeful that we'll get to a point where we can, you know, at least get together and jam in a backyard, if not perform. I was thinking about pop-up concerts for the summer. You know, if we don't advertise it, if it's not an event, maybe we can just show up in a park, spread ourselves out, and play for an hour or so. And anyone who happens to come by can hear and enjoy. Because we, even if we're not working as artists, we need an outlet. And yeah. So I've got to find a way to do that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. It just struck me when you were talking about that and just like, man, it's been forever since I feel like I've talked with anybody about like, so this is what we're thinking about doing. And I think it was something that we really took for granted, right? Or I did, you know, hearing about all these cool, fun adventures and stuff that people wanted to do. And now it's like, I mean, it's just been forever since we've talked about any of that stuff. It just seems like a distant memory, you know. Talk to me in some of these wonderful notes you sent over. You noted that you lived in Germany earlier on. Talk about, I mean, just being, you know, expanding your, you know, anyone expanding their cultures and, you know, living somewhere else. I mean, what was that like for you and also kind of creatively as well?
That's an interesting question. You know, we are a military family. My husband was a C-130 pilot in the Air Force. And I also grew up as a military brat. My father was in the Army. My mother was in the Army before I was born. And so my experience with the military growing up was that we were constantly moving. The Army moves you a lot. My experience with my own family and my husband's service was that we barely moved at all. We lived in North Carolina for 6 years. And then we lived in Germany for almost 5 years. And we got to live in Germany during this joyous time when my children were age 4 to 8 over that period of time, actually 4 months to 8 years old. And we threw them into the German schools. The Germans do everything with fanfare and festivity and lots of cutty-pasty building things, lanterns out of paper that get carried through the streets with songs and stories. And it's like a fantasy land. But it's also very orderly and logical. And people sweep their gutters and shop on a daily basis. They don't go to Costco. And so we learned a lot about intimate culture instead of the big American, let's go to Costco and Kohl's and everything this weekend. They spend their time out in nature, out at festivals, in their gardens, creating things with their children. It's interesting that you bring up this question because one of the projects that's on my mind for the future is to do a children's music project. And I think that part of that comes from our experience there. You know, the song, the story, it's all woven together. And it would be really nice to produce something like that that I can share with another generation when we're gone. But I think that living in different places and having different perspectives really gives you an opportunity to understand people that are different than you, to look at situations from different angles, to troubleshoot. I've done some troubleshooting in my wedding music work. I've worked with a lot of LGBTQ couples, and there are often dynamics and nuances to working with those couples, whether you're a musician or a wedding planner or a coordinator, because things aren't always as simple as one might expect. There are often lots of heavy emotions and dynamics. And I think I also learned a lot of that from my experience working in prison and the prison education program I worked with for 15 years. But that's a whole different topic. So.
Well, that sounds interesting too.
I'm what you call a Renaissance man or woman. I always grew up thinking, you know, the Renaissance, the chief cook and bottle washer, someone who knows a little bit about everything, but isn't an expert about anything. Although I consider myself a very talented musician, I'm not an expert. I'm not classically trained. I didn't study jazz in school. I studied religion and feminist studies in school. But those are Renaissance majors. When you look at when you study religion, I think that did Ben Meadows say he studied religion also?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think he did. When you study religion, you're looking at the way we believe we are in the world from many different perspectives. When you study women's studies or feminist studies, you're studying many different academic subjects from a certain perspective. And you're studying a lot of race, class, gender studies. And it just gives you these multiple lenses to look at a situation with. And I think that I bring those skills and those experiences from studying those subjects and the travels in my life to every situation, even if we're just sitting down trying to figure out. The last wedding I did, the couple wanted to have their family play music on stage. And the couple wanted much more music than they could afford. And so we worked with them closely for several months to figure out how we could make this happen for them and how we could shrink some aspects. And still, we ended up allowing them to play with their family members to play with our band for part of the reception. And we brought a DJ with us who was able to extend the evening beyond. He was our sound guy and our DJ. He was able to extend the musical evening beyond what they could afford for the band. So, you know, just thinking about how to troubleshoot those things creatively can make all the difference in the world at someone's event.
Well, and like you said, and like Ben said in his interview too, you know, studying these things and experiencing these, you know, differences, it just helps us as vendors kind of work with, you know, a variety of, you know, couples and people and, you know, it, kind of in your day-to-day life, we're kind of, you know, we are who we are and we're, you know, kind of in whatever bubble we're in, but, you know, it's so great in the wedding community where you do get, you know, couples from all walks of life and all different backgrounds and cultures and religions and everything. And it's so cool to be able to, you know, kind of live outside of even like, I would not know anything about anything unless I got to meet all these cool couples, right? Like I would be totally stuck in like my, you know, just kind of in my own little bubble. And it's so fun to be able to experience kind of all those different things and you know, desires for, you know, what people want everything to be like. It's just kind of a fun, it's a fun world we live in that way, you know?
It is. It's very different than our parents' world. You know, I know it, during my parents' generation, everything was very formulaic. You know, if you were going to get married, you had a wedding and you wore a dress and you had cake and punch in the church reception hall. And if there was a musician, it was the pianist or the church organist. And there are so many different options today and so many different ideas. You know, the creativity that brides and grooms have is amazing. And many of them are DIY masters. I love it. I love seeing what people can do. And I also love working with people on budget. To be honest, I haven't worked with a lot of people that aren't on a budget. And so I find that when people are on a budget, they're much more open, creative. They have ideas that are out of the box. And that's a lot of fun. Even though it's a challenge, it's a lot of fun.
No, I'm kind of in that world too. And I belong to like videography Facebook groups and stuff. And I always see these, you know, usually on the East Coast or in international, whatever. And they're talking about all these, oh, big budget, you know, whatever. And I said, I don't know. Yeah, that's definitely not our world. Like, we're definitely like you in the, you know, what can we do to make this work? And I think, especially now with kind of everything changing and adapting, it's going to even more kind of be up to, you know, vendors, us as vendors, to kind of like make budgets work and figure out like, what can we do or what can we accommodate or how can we, you know, whatever, kind of customize whatever we need to, you know what I mean?
Right. Even the new trend towards elopement, I find fascinating. You know, what does that mean exactly? Is that in my day, an elopement meant that you got on an airplane and you flew to France or something or to Las Vegas. and you got married in secret, and then you came back and told everyone about it afterwards. And now what I'm reading online is that people are actually planning their elopements, and they're taking close family with them, and they're being intentional about it, and they're adding some of the amenities that they would have had at a larger wedding and making it very personal. And I think that that's new and refreshing, and I'm excited to see where that goes and excited to see how music can be involved in it as well.
No, absolutely. I can't remember one of the recent, I can't even remember if it was one that we've posted yet or not, to be honest, but we were talking about, that elopement like used to be like a dirty word or like just a different, like you said, like we're running off somewhere. And now, elopement, I guess, is a word that we've all chosen to associate with it. But yeah, it is just more that just smaller, really, finally plan, it's the same as a wedding, just on a different scale. And it's not any better or worse or any, it's just different. And I do think that, we're going to see a lot more of that just with, legal stuff and just safety issues and health issues and everything else,
Right. We all have to approach our business differently as we move into the future. And, it's a little bit of a reality check. It's time to check in on our paperwork. It's time to check in on ourselves as we enter into contracts with other people and try and find a way to protect ourselves as business owners, but also be kind and considerate and understanding when situations arise, whether it's a COVID epidemic or whether it's a death in the family or something else.
I want to talk about a little bit more about your history of performing in jazz clubs and things like that, and just more of that, just the performance and vibe, and talk about kind of your experiences with that. I do every year we film for Seattle Jazz ED or Jazzed. It's a school here in Seattle where they teach jazz music to kids, and they're able to perform and stuff, and they would never be able to have all that otherwise. And every year I go film their fundraiser, and it's amazing to me to see the excitement and energy and creativity and just passion that they have to perform. And talk to me just about your experiences as a performer, and what do you get out of that, or what do you enjoy about kind of that whole world?
Sure. I didn't start out in jazz. When my band members started talking about it, I didn't really know what they were talking about. I started out with my first garage band, I guess one would call it. We also called it the church band because everyone in it was somehow connected to our church and our kids. And we played folk rock covers from the 70s, things like Jackson Browne and the Doobie Brothers. And that's where I sort of learned that I had a voice, but didn't really own it. My name wasn't on the project. I hid in the background. I was a reluctant lead vocalist. And after a few years, that project evolved into something more complicated, and we started playing more complicated music. We became a summer band, and we started playing with the jazz rock fusion genre of the 60s and 70s. We were bringing in more talented musicians into the project over time. And it was through those musicians, some of the piano players and bass players, that the question came up, why don't we throw some cocktail tunes into the front of the set if we're going to start early in the evening? That'll appeal to the old people that are dining. And then they started calling those cocktail tunes jazz tunes, and I started asking questions. Well, what are you talking about, jazz? And they were talking about a form, and I started asking, excuse me, what kind of a form? And so what I learned was that jazz is basically improvisational playing of the popular standards of the early 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. And as it moved through the 50s and 60s, it started to evolve into other forms. bebop forms and more contemporary jazz. And then John Coltrane came along, and Miles Davis, and the bebop singers like Betty Carter. And it's just become this wonderful, complex world. There's a beautiful graphic image that's sometimes posted on Facebook of this giant tree, like a giant family tree. And it has the roots of jazz and all these different branches and different places it has gone. And I find that so fascinating, you know, different styles from the style of gypsy jazz of the Django Reinhardt to the smooth jazz and contemporary jazz artists of today. And what I found in the music, once I learned what I was doing, because there are some rules, it's interesting. There is format, there are rules, there is theory involved, but there's also this freedom. And if everyone comes to the table with this core knowledge and framework, then as you approach a piece of music, that's where the creativity and freedom happens. So whether you're doing a classic standard, like, let's say The Way You Look Tonight, that's a lovely tune that's often played at weddings. Or whether you're playing I Want to Rock with You by Michael Jackson and attacking it as from a jazz approach, it can be a lot of fun. And so for me, whether I'm playing at a wedding or whether I'm playing at a winery as a duo or at a club or for a special event, with a five-piece combo, each of those opportunities to play with different musicians or even with the same musician again is a new creative experience. I listen back sometimes. I record a lot of things on my phone because I want to check in with myself and make sure that I'm on point. And if I'm not, figure out what went wrong. And I listen to those recordings every once in a while. And, you know, there must be a million versions of Joni Mitchell's Help Me. It's a tune that I sing all the time as a standard. And they're all different. And they can be with the same people, and yet they're still all different. They're all creatively different. And I find that so interesting. And I think as an audience member as well, when you're out listening to jazz, you find that so interesting as well. Because I don't just go out and perform, I go out and listen to my peers, and I follow my peers, and I listen to their music. And it's equally as creative and changing and evolving, and that's exciting. Jazz is exciting.
Talk about relating, you know, a lot of the creativity you have, the passion, energy, performance, all that now to, you know, working with couples. If they, you know, were to, you know, they do reach out to you, they were to reach out to you in the future, you know, walk me through that process of how it looks to translate a lot of the, you know, the visions and stuff you have into kind of, you know, making someone's day perfect like that.
Sure. That's a great idea. When possible, I like to meet with a couple and even members of their family in person at first, have a coffee conversation, get to know, you know, who they are, where they met, how they decided they were going to get married and what their overall vision is for the whole wedding. Just in brief, I don't need to know all the details. And that gives me a picture. It gives me a vision of what they want to create. And then I like data. I used to serve as a wedding coordinator, wedding day of planner, all those different things. I also sold wedding dresses and pageant dresses when I was very young. And so I like gathering information. So I usually, after that first initial meeting or a telephone conversation, if we can't meet in person, I send them this intake form where I also gather information that I can refer back to. And on that intake form, we talk about music. I ask them to send me, you know, what's the music they're listening to? Who are the artists they listen to on a regular basis? What's their Spotify playlist like? And I'll listen to their music. What are the songs that they'd like to have in their wedding? Have they thought about dancing with their father and what that's going to sound like and feel like. Is it important to them or not? Or do they just want me to choose the music for the evening? Do they love trumpets? Do they hate trumpets? You know, what instrumentation are they envisioning? Would they rather have me show up with three guitarists and a bass player and do more of an acoustic set? You know, do they like Latin music? And so I spend a lot of time trying to understand what makes them tick musically. Because if you can understand who they are musically, then you can create something that will both appeal to them and the generations around them. You know, you find a core and then you wrap the other things around. You know, you want to make sure that you have danceable tunes. You want to make sure that you have tunes during the dinner hour that are primarily instrumental and aren't going to intrude over people's conversation. You want to choreograph the evening. If I'm doing a whole wedding ceremony to, the last wedding I did, I actually did it with a broken leg, which is a different story, but it was choreographed around a song called Polka Dots and Moonbeams. A country dance was being held in the garden is the first line of that song. And it was a country wedding on a farm, and the ceremony was in the garden. And the rest of the event was in a tent, in a small tent. But we wove that song throughout the evening. It became both the song that the bride walked into for her processional, and it became the transitional theme between each of the different sets. And as we would move to cutting the cake or move to the toasting, and it really served as a thread to bring the whole evening together. And it helped weave the ceremony music, the cocktail music, the dinner music, the dance music, the second dance set, which was different than the earlier dance set in style and mood. And that took time and creativity. And I enjoy doing that. To me, that makes it a more satisfying experience for both my clients and for my musicians and I. And we worked on that music. You know, there are times when we can just show up and do a gig. You know, we show up to the job, we've got a list of charts, the music's been planned, and we play it, and we play it well. And there are other times when, you know, we're going to get together four times, and we're going to learn those five tunes that are really important to them that we've never heard before. And we're going to make sure that we do them really, really well. And that seems like it takes a lot of extra time from the musicians, but it also provides gratification when you nail it and everything comes together. So that's sort of my process. I also, you know, try and work with financial aspects. You know, there's the budget that's always important, and budgets for music have declined over the years. You know, when I started doing weddings, I would go online and, okay, well, what are people paying for music? And you'd see these spreadsheets and maybe 10% of a budget on music. I think I read today online on something posted on Facebook that couples are putting 4% of their budget into music. And, you know, 4% of a $20,000 budget is $800. And that's not a lot of money when you're asking five musicians to come and play for 5 hours, plus the setup and the breakdown and the travel and everything. So how do we navigate those challenges? How do we navigate valuing musicians and valuing the gifts that they give and balance that with ever decreasing budgets? And they'll probably continue to decrease. So we have to think creatively and work locally. I think I mentioned before that if I was doing a wedding in Olympia, for instance, I might use primarily local Olympian musicians because they're going to cost less than bringing my musicians down from the peninsula. Yeah. And those are ways to be creative and work with couples on their budgets and make, because live music should be affordable for everyone, at least for part of their wedding.
Yeah, is it just, I was going to say, how are you combating that? Just like you said, offering, you know, solutions and things. Is that, do you find that something that you have to educate, you know, potential clients about, or, you know, like.
I do. I find that there's a perception out there that if you want to have live music at your wedding, that means hiring a wedding band. And if you go online and search for a wedding band, you instantly see quotes about price ranges that can run into the $5,000, $10,000 range. And it doesn't have to be that. You know, it can be much, much, much less. For a full day of music, I think that I can accommodate a full day of music for $3,500 with a large band. And that's, you know, working locally, working creatively, trying to compensate everyone fairly. Now, if you ask us to travel to Orcas Island, for instance, you know, we're going to need a room. We're going to need travel compensation, other things like that. You know, Have Jazz will travel. I'll travel anywhere, and I'll pull together a beautiful band for you anywhere in the world. But it's the travel and the lodging, those are the things that start to add up. And so being able to resource musicians anywhere in the world is a talent. And there are ways to do that. And most people don't think about it, but it does happen.
So in kind of listening to you talk today, it does, and from looking at everything you had sent over before too, and your website, I mean, it does seem like, a lot of your strengths, you know, are like you said, you know, figuring out, you know, flexibility and, you know, pulling in different things and also being able to kind of handle, you know, a lot of different, because I'm kind of the, you know, the dummy here, right? Like I think about like a wedding band or like, you know, there's like a string things or whatever, but like you can really kind of accommodate, lots of different, you know, things that someone will be looking for, right? Is that fair to say that if someone were going to you, that you could be able to accommodate, you know, a vast combination of different things they're looking for in terms of musical needs and, you know, styles and things like that?
I believe so. I believe that if someone comes to me with a vision for their music, I can do the best to make it happen myself and with my own musicians, or I can help them find someone who can meet their needs. And, you know, for instance, thinking outside of the box, I like to think outside of the box. Let's say someone's going to have a backyard wedding and they want to have live music, but they can't afford a wedding band. And maybe they can't afford me. I bet you I can find them a local bar band that'll come and do their music and do a very good job and make it work for their budget. And I'm happy to help with that. I'm happy to guide them in that direction, even if I don't get the job. I hope I'll get the job, and I hope that I can work with them to provide them what they need, but I'm never going to walk away and leave someone standing there saying, well, now what do I do?
Because it can be intimidating, you know, I mean, people, like I said, I'm in the wedding, you know, world, and I don't know all the odds and ends of, you know, each vendor type. I mean, it's really hard, right? And it is a lot of education and communication, you know, no matter what field you're in.
I also make a habit of trying to keep my personal overhead down. I don't buy tables at big wedding events. I can't afford them. Because I try and keep the budget under control for my clients, that doesn't give me a large profit overhead. And so I don't have $1,000 to buy a table at the big event in Seattle, or however much. I know some of them cost even more than that. So I do guerrilla marketing. I make flyers and rack cards, and I reach out to event coordinators, to event vendors. Sometimes I'll show up at, I actually went to the wedding expo out in Port Angeles with my brand new puppy, and I parked right there at the entrance by the parking lot with the back door open, you would be amazed at what a PR magnet a little puppy is. And so, you know, there wasn't a lot of music offered. There was one DJ at that event. I went inside. I met some vendors, built some relationships. But on the way out, I just asked them, hey, have you ever thought about live music for your event? And then I handed them my literature. So I try and think creatively as well about how I market my business. And that keeps my overhead down. That keeps my financial needs down when working with a client. So I'm not building in that extra 20-30% onto my business quote to help carry my business. But I'm also not working every weekend at weddings. I would say maybe I do 4 a year. It would be nice to do more in the future, especially as I'm settling in here out on the Olympic Peninsula. And I'd like to grow my business in that direction. And maybe I'll change the model of how I work as I see what the needs are of the community and what works best. But for now, I'm a word of mouth person. I use Facebook. I use my website. And most of the jobs that I've gotten have been from people who have heard me out in community playing or via word of mouth.
I want to hear about this album that you released in December.
I know. It's interesting. I had been thinking about an album project for a long time, and the musicians I was working with in my summer cover band were always against doing an album. They were always like, well, who wants to hear somebody do a cover of whatever? They're not going to be interested in your album. That's not creative at all. Let's just do some demos. And so, but I had this burning desire to say something, you know, to leave something behind after I'm gone, right? And so I was starting to contemplate what I could do musically. And would that be a folk album? Because I do sing some folk music, and I was part of a folk group in Philadelphia. Would that be a jazz album? You know, would it be a Joni Mitchell tribute? Because I love Joni Mitchell. And what happened was my husband and I made a quick decision to move to the West Coast earlier than we thought. And last spring, we suddenly pushed the envelope and decided to sell our house really fast and move on out here to Washington. And we put the house on the market. We sold the house. And suddenly I had a month before I was going to leave. And I wanted to go in and record some cocktail demos with one of my guitarists so that I would just have something to put on my website and, you know, try and book some wineries and things out here when I arrived. And my engineer said, Gene, you've been talking about doing an album for years. Why don't you just do it? You've got time before you leave. And I was like, no, I don't. There's no way. And in a matter of 20 minutes, he convinced me that I could. And so I did. In 2 days, I recorded the music with hired guns, as they say, professional studio musicians. And two of them, Tom Lawton and Kevin Hansen, were particularly influential in some of the flavor throughout the album musically that ties it together. But the songs that were chosen, the ideas, the arrangements, the flow is all my work. A beautiful job of engineering and mixing and mastering was done by Glenn Barrett at Morningstar Studios. And it's a beautiful statement of who I am musically. There's everything from Ring of Fire, a Johnny Cash cover that opens the album, to original lyrics, to instrumentals, collaborations with other artists, and, you know, a Bill Evans tune on the back end. And it's a great album to listen to when you're driving through Washington. It's interesting. I don't listen to my own work, but I keep the CD in the car. And when I'm on a long drive out here, that's when I listen to it and I realize how wonderful it is. Very proud of it. You know, I'm 57 years old. I decided to to go for it. I paid for it with money that I earned, and it's my project. And now that I've done it, I want more. So I talked about the children's project. I'd love to do something maybe a little more modern. I'm connected, spending this COVID time, not just learning guitar, but connecting with other younger musicians. There are a couple musicians I've connected to that are interested in jazz fusion, and I'd love to learn more about electronic music. And I've become interested in surf music and surf jazz since I've been out here on the West Coast. And wouldn't it be fun to do something that was sort of West Coast surf jazzy, electronic-y, just something fun? And so I'm hopeful that when all of this oppression we're suffering from the virus lifts, that there will be a surge of creativity in the music community, and new things might evolve.
I love it. And kudos to you for, you know, releasing something. It must be so personal, and I could not do that, you know, putting yourself out there and releasing that. And I just say, you know, obviously kudos. And I think it's great.
Thank you. And yes, you could. You just have to make up your mind to do it and go for it.
Absolutely. This has been such an enjoyable chat today, getting to know you and emailing and stuff ahead of time. And I, like I said, I appreciate you really just the guide now, the benchmark for anybody that wants to come on the podcast and doing my research, doing my research for me. And so that we could just focus on having, you know, just such a nice, delightful conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time and reaching out to come on and taking time today to chat with me.
Thank you. And I'm also enjoying the podcast that you're producing. It's giving me an opportunity to get to listen to a few a week and learn about the other professionals in our area. So thank you for what you're doing. It's a very creative idea, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're, I think I mentioned before we started recording, we'll be entering year three in like 2 weeks. And so you got 100 or so to catch up on. So hopefully there's a good, we're building a good backlog for people.
But, you do. You have quite a few. I was impressed with your SoundCloud site.
And, you know, and I've always said from the beginning that I think it's important not only for, you know, the week to week, obviously, but as we meet new vendors and new vendors and new vendors, that people can go back and, you know, we try to keep them somewhat evergreen. I mean, obviously right now with everything going on in the world, it's hard to, you know, not focus on that. But I do think it's valuable content, you know, no matter when you listen to it. And you know, we find people all the time that say, oh, I just, you know, listened to whatever, and it was 2 years ago, you know, who knows? So, no, I think it's good. And I appreciate you joining the family and coming on and just taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Can we put a plug in for my website?
Absolutely.
To check out what I do.
I was going to say, you beat me to it. If anyone is would like to hear more about you and your music and the CD and just everything, where would you have them check out? You have lots of content on your site.
I would have them go to www.genetherapymusic.com. That's therapy like in a therapist. But I am not a therapist. Gene Therapy was the name of my old band in Philadelphia. And so it's still my overall brand name. And from there, you can find an event calendar. You can find a wedding page with information and downloads. You can find my album and a blog that I should pay more attention to. Maybe I'll do a blog posting about you, Reed, and what you're doing. And just to have something different on there.
Absolutely.
A little cross pollinating.
Any blog is a good blog. I still beat the drum in 2020 about the importance of blogging. So
All right. Thank you so much.
Well, perfect. Well, we'll stay in touch. And thank you again. If you're like Gene and you're interested in coming on a future episode of the podcast, you can go to www.bestmadevideos.com/podcastguest. And that's a nice, easy questionnaire that'll get you in the system. And we can start figuring out if it would be a good fit to get you on and get you featured. Thank you so much again. This has been another episode of Get to Know Your Wedding Pro. Check back next week for another wedding vendor interview. Thanks so much.
All right. Peace and good health to everyone.